Blog Talk Radio.
Politics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Today, we're going to be discussing Hyperborea, the Thule Society, Contact Report 10 of the Billy Meyer case, ISIS, the universal consciousness, and the human spirit. So we get a big variety of things to look at this afternoon. I want to start out talking about the Thule Society. The Thule Society was a group in Germany, German occultists, and they had some ideas that weren't that far from the truth. They talked about an ancient place called Hyperborea, and they thought it was in the extreme north, which it was in the very, very ancient past. However, Hyperborea is actually one and the same with the region of Florida. But some 113,000 years ago, before the pole shift, Hyperborea, Florida, was located near our North Pole. And at that time, the poles were very moderate climate. I don't know how, but they had like a endless summer in the north. So the Thule Society in Germany traced the roots of the German people back to this place called Hyperborea, which was in the north. And they had identified Ultima Thule, they called it, as the capital city of ancient Hyperborea. Now they thought it was near Greenland or Iceland. That's because they didn't know about the pole shift that occurred about 11,500 years ago at the end of the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria. So about 113,000 years ago, this man named Eris the Barbarian. He came back from Beta Centauri and he conquered Hyperborea. This was during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria. And he took over Hyperborea, and his son Eris the Second took over India, the area of India. Now, then there was the great war between Atlantis and Lemuria that occurred about 11,500 years ago. They brought this great fragment from the destroyed planet Melona back to the Earth, slammed it into the Earth. Then there was a pole shift that occurred. And the area of Hyperborea shifted down into the area of Florida now, which ironically it still has a good climate. So anyway, that's where we got this whole idea of Hyperborea. Now, for the longest time, and I think they may still be there, I'm not certain. I think they probably are still there. But in Mount Shasta in California are the remnants of the Hyperboreans. There were about 700 of them. They live in this city that's buried deep in this mountain. There are blonde-haired people, They keep to themselves. Sometimes you can see their golden-colored spacecraft coming out of, I think it's the eastern mountain peak. And there are actually photographs of these ships, and I have a photograph up on exopoliticsohio.us. If you go to the Billy Meyer page and you click on the link for Hyperborea, it'll take you down to this area. And you can click on the, if you click on the photo there, you'll see a Hyperborean spacecraft. The Hyperboreans tend to keep to themselves. They have these beam weapons that they sometimes use to stun people in that area of Mount Shasta. If the Earth humans get too close, the Hyperboreans tend to stun them with these weapons and just get away from them. These weapons just temporarily make it so people can't move. Anyway, and there are smaller groups of the Hyperboreans that live unrecognized deep underground near the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. So that's kind of the history of Hyperborea. Why I think it's important is because it links back to after the pole shift, after the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria. One of these kings of wisdom came to power, a man named Jehovan. And Jehovan took control over the Hyperboreans, the descendants of Armus, the descendants of the Aryans and the Hebrons. There was basically these three or four groups that were still on the earth after the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. Now, the legends that the Nazis were working under is they had some information about Hyperborea. They thought it was near the North Pole, which in that time it was. But they didn't know about the pole shift. And they had this notion that the capital of Hyperborea was a city called Ultima Thule. Anyway, the Thule Society was a German occultist in occultist group in Germany. There were women associated with the Thule Society, like Maria Autisch, Marie Orsic, she's sometimes called. The ladies of the Thule Society had this very, very long hair, which helped them in their telepathy. Now, according to the Meyer material, there was some connection between what was called the Giza Intelligences and the Thule Society. Now, the Giza Intelligences were headquartered far below the Giza Plateau in these old cubicle constructions that are some 72,000 years old. They were the group, the splinter group off of the Pleiarians, the renegades, that tried to control the people of the earth through religions. They presented themselves as the creator, as angels, and they used a kind of technology called telenotic impulses. And these Giza intelligences were active all the way up until the 1970s. So that's our connection with current times and with the ancient past. I wanted to connect a few dots a little clearer than I probably have in past shows, and we'll go over this information again to really appreciate how it all fits together. And of course, just quickly, I'll throw this information about Noah in. Noah, the Meyer material refers to as Noah Codnoser, who was about 3 meters and 10 centimeters tall. It's close to 10 feet tall, right around 10 feet tall. And he worked with an Ishwish, or an extraterrestrial named Zebulon, who warn him about one of the great floods. There were multiple floods that occurred on the earth in the past. And the whole story of Noah occurred about 100,000 years ago, in fact. And it's a mixture of fable and a mixture of fact. The real man's name was Noah Codnesser. The name that remained in our stories, like in the Bible, is Noah. Noah Codnesser had communications with an extraterrestrial human. Eventually, that extraterrestrial human became God in the stories, as this was all passed down. The ark did not come to rest on the top of Mount Ararat, but at some point lower. None of those animals would have been able to get down off the summit. None of those large four-legged animals would have made it off of the summit of Mount Ararat. Anyway, I like to review these little bits of history associated with the Meyer material. They paint a much clearer picture of what has happened in our past. At least I hope it paints a clearer picture. I want to step back for a second here into Contact Report 10. Now, Contact Report 10 occurred in 1975, March 26, at about 3:20 p.m., and the contact person was Semyase. Now, Billy, Edward Albert Meyer, who's known as Billy Meyer, he's known as Billy Meyer because of his fondness of Western dress and Western movies. His real name is Edward Albert Meyer. The name Edward means guardian of the treasure. And he's guardian of an ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of the truth, the teaching of life. He had two extraterrestrial mentors before Semyase. One was an extraterrestrial man named Svath, who Billy met with from the time he was 5 years old until the time he was about 16. And then his contacts picked up with an extraterrestrial woman named Askit, right about when he was 16 years old, and lasted until he was about 27. Then Billy had 11 years of no contacts. During that time, he met his wife, a Greek woman. He was in the Middle East. He had his horrible bus accident, lost his left arm, and moved to Switzerland with Calliope, and they started a life. He had various odd jobs, lived a normal life, had three children. But his contacts picked up again in 1975 with this extraterrestrial woman named Semyase. Now, this is the public mission. This is the part of the Meyer contacts that people have heard about. And that's when Colonel Wendell Stevens came to Switzerland with his investigative team, and they checked out the photographs, and they checked out the films, and they put Billy under lie detector tests, and they talked with other people in Switzerland to find out if this was a real situation or if it was something that was just made up. Well, according to their findings, this was a real thing that was going on at this time. And we're quite fortunate because Billy's still alive today. And Edward Albert Meyer, Billy Meyer, who lives in Schmidruti, Switzerland, according to the Meyer information, has been a prophet six other times on the earth. He's been the person we call Enoch, who they call Henoch. Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. So he's been on this mission for the past 13,000 years to reintroduce this ancient universal teaching called the teaching of the spirit, the teaching of the truth, the teaching of life. Because we here on the earth have been interfered with. Starting about 11,500 years ago, these Giza intelligences, one of which, who was Jehovah, His father was Eris the 11th, who was the 11th descendant removed from Eris, the barbarian who originally started the Great War in Atlantis and Lemuria. But after the pole shift and after the people of the Earth started to climb out of this rubble and try to figure out what was going on, these Giza intelligences showed up and started using religion to try to gain control of the people of the Earth. Well, the Plearen, kind of subtly in the background, worked with this spirit form who incarnated at various moments, various times, during the past 11,000, 13,000 years in order to put this information back into our society. What does this information teach? It teaches about the universal consciousness, about the human spirit, about the reincarnation of the human spirit. It teaches us about controlling our thoughts and taking personal responsibility. So up until 1975, when Semyase first landed her ship in Switzerland, landed during the day and would step out and walk over to Billy. Billy, I think at this time, was about 39 or 40 years old, would sit down under a tree and talk to this woman. Now, Semyase was about 340-some years old at that time. She was a slender, young, pretty woman, fair skin, sparkling blue eyes, light blonde hair. And she met with Billy for a couple of years, up until 1977. And then she suffered a life-threatening accident in the Semyase Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidt-Ruti. I think at that time someone actually walked in the room when Billy and her were having a contact. She fell, hit her head on a table or something to that effect. She managed to beam herself back to her ship, but lost consciousness and eventually had to be taken back to her home planet of Era for medical treatment and rehabilitation. However, eventually Semyase came back, and in 1984, it was the very last contact that took place between Billy and Semyase. And she had a collapse during this meeting, a cerebral collapse, and was at that point transported to the Tao universe. And of course, the Tao universe is the parallel universe to ours, the home of Asket. Semyase was treated by a group of extraterrestrials called the Sonars, S-O-N-A-E-R, from the Tao universe. And these are very interesting people, these Sonars, or however you pronounce their name. They do not require ships to travel through space and time. Very interesting. It kind of opens up what the real powers of the human spirit are, and that's much of what we'll be talking about today. Verse 3, line 3 of Contact Report 10 says, "The human bears a spirit that does not die and that does not sleep during his deepest sleep. It records all of our thoughts, all of our actions. It will even tell us if our thinking is incorrect." This spirit is a little needle point size spark of energy that sends an energy throughout every cell in the body. It animates every cell in the body. It's located in the midbrain. In the center of the left and the right lobe, there's an area called the midbrain, an area called the tectum. The tectum is made up of the superior colliculus and the inferior colliculus. And imagine this little glowing, tiny, tiny ball of light in there. That's your human spirit. And that's the real you. That's the part of you that lasts through many, many incarnations into the physical. Now, the human spirit is the creation, is a creation of the universal consciousness. You notice I didn't say God. The Meyer material does not use the word God because of its religious connotations and the confusions of our religions here on the earth, who imagine an all-powerful, immutable being, when in fact the universal consciousness is incredibly powerful. It's a superintelligence that builds universes as a part of its own evolution. But it's not immutable. In fact, it evolves. And it evolves through different stages. And these different stages are immense in number. The universal consciousness evolves into 10 to the 49th power different evolutionary stages, so to speak. Our universal consciousness in our universe, the Dern universe, our universal consciousness is a young universal consciousness because it's in the first stage of its evolution. Because we have a material belt in our universe where we have planets and galaxies and stars and that sort of thing. Higher evolved universes do not have a material belt. And that's a strange thing to imagine. But in any way, this universal consciousness creates human spirits as a part of its own evolution. I've heard of the human spirit as being called the boots on the ground for the universal consciousness. Well, that's a very interesting way to look at that. So, and I've been talking about what this human spirit is and that it's located in the superior colliculus. Each time we have a lifetime, the human spirit is placed into the body of a child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. You'll get a new personality, a new material consciousness from the comprehensive consciousness block. And the universal consciousness will take your past life memories and store them in your subconscious. So you'll get inspiration from your subconscious as well as impulses from the storage banks. Now, in verse 4 of Contact Report 10, Semyase said, "The spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm, and every human has his own spirit." And that might be a good place for us to pick up here. So I'll give us a little break. We can listen to some relaxing music, and then we'll pick back up right there in Contact Report 10. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We'll be back in about 4 minutes. Thank you. Hello, everyone. I want to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. At the beginning of the show, we were talking about ancient Hyperborea, which was actually located near the North Pole and was an area of eternal summer. It was a tremendously beautiful place, and the landmass of Florida was actually located up near the North Pole. Before the Great Pole Shift, the Great Pole Shift occurred, and now we have Florida where Florida is, and it still has great weather. We talked a little bit about the Thule Society in Germany, the Nazi mystics, who knew some of the history of Hyperborea and knew that during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, the Hyperboreans lived near the North Pole up there. And there were extraterrestrial peoples on the Earth all from about 150,000 years ago up to about 11.5 thousand years ago. These were extraterrestrial humans. They had a very highly advanced society. They built many of these ancient monolithic, megalithic structures like the Great Pyramid of Giza, which the Meyer material says is some 73,000 years old. And the Nazi mystics of the Thule Society knew about Hyperborea. They had a few of their facts confused. They didn't know about the pole shift, among other things. Anyway, I had started before the break talking about Contact Report 10, which is really the beginning of the spiritual teachings. And I was talking about the human spirit. Now, in line 4 of Contact Report 10, it says, "The spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm, and that every human has his own spirit." Well, I want to look at some of these German words. The Contact Reports, there's maybe 560 some of them now, I believe, are like little booklets, and anywhere from one page to about 100 pages. And they were originally written in German. After Billy would have a contact, he would write this information in German at a very high rate of speed on his computer. He would get this kind of telepathy after the physical contact. So he would get it exactly as it occurred. But we here in English-speaking countries don't really speak German, so this information has been translated. Caltech Report 10, line 4 says, the spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm, and every human has his own spirit. Now, the word that's translated, the German word Träger, is translated here as bearer. The spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm. However, one of the meanings of Träger is repository. A repository is a receptacle or a place where things are stored. So you could think of your spirit as a place where things are stored. It's a storehouse for things that are creative. And to create means to evolve from your own thoughts or your own imagination. For example, a work of art is creative. And the human spirit is the storage place for these creative things. In fact, in line 3, it says it records all of our thoughts and motions. So, what is the creative realm that the human spirit deals with? What is a realm? A realm is a community, a territory over which a sovereign rules. Now, the German word that's translated realm is the word Reiches, which can mean realm, domain, kingdom, or empire. So this paints a very interesting picture that your human spirit is a storage place for creativity. And this creativity is mentioned throughout Contact Report 10 in various different places. In fact, Semyase told Billy that everything is within the human, that it's the microcosm within the macrocosm. Now, what did she mean by that? That means that there are repeating patterns in nature. There's, at the smallest level, we see the same patterns that exist at the highest level. The spiral of our DNA, the spiral of the seashell, the spiraling arms of the galaxy, the branching pattern in our circulatory system, the branching patterns on plants and trees, the branching patterns on lightning. This is the seal, the stamp of the universal consciousness. It works in these repeating patterns. The electron rotates around the nucleus of the atom. The planet rotates around the stars rotate around the galaxies. It's all part of creation. In line 15, Semyase said, the inner dimensions of the human are endless. And she said, the spirit is the wonder of all wonders, and all power emerges from it. She said that the human spirit is the seat of the infinite. But few are aware of that it takes sound logic and freedom from unreal teaching to unlock the power of the human spirit. In fact, the spirit is called the wonder of all wonders, and all power emerges from it. What is a wonder? A wonder is something strange, something surprising, something that causes astonishment. So the human spirit is kind of a fragment of this universal consciousness. Kind of. And happiness is always comes from within. If a human is happy, his happiness comes from within, because happiness is self-created and it's never associated with a location. It doesn't have to be. Joy says to come forth from the human's inner part, and it's created by spiritual poise. What is spiritual poise? Spiritual poise is balance. It's steadfastness. It's being in balance. Samyasi described wisdom also in this contact. She said, wisdom is an elemental and tremendous power. What is wisdom? Wisdom is having the ability to discern what is true. And when something is considered elemental, it's associated with the great forces of nature. Let me continue here. In line 47, Samyasi said, and therefore there is only one existence that rules throughout the universe, only one creation, only one truth, one knowledge, one wisdom, and that is synchronous and unchanging for all times. Let's define some of these terms that Samyasi is using here. Existence means to have life, to have animation, to have being. For something to be synchronous, it means to occur at the same time. And this passage talks about one knowledge and one wisdom. And we have the same idea echoed by Svath. Svath stated that in the entire universe, everything is one and bound together. He also stated that this oneness and connectedness with all and everything is the result of the might and the immeasurable love of creation. What love is Svath talking about there? Remember, Svath was Billy's first extraterrestrial mentor. His contacts with Svath started back in 1945 when Billy was a young boy growing up in Switzerland. Well, the love that Svath is talking about is called in the Meyer material a wisdom-conditioned love. Now, this isn't typical love. Wisdom-conditioned love is constant. It doesn't depend on circumstances like the attractiveness of the object, doesn't depend on the details of life, yet it's a harmonious state of absolute connectedness with all things. Now, there's a German word that describes this connectedness with all things. It's called Verbundenheit. Verbundenheit can be translated as spiritual affinity or closeness or connectivity. It's a bond. It's a normal thing for a human to have the feeling of Verbundenheit. And it's related to the law of love. Billy has a book called The Law of Love, and parts of that can be found on the Future of Mankind website. And the Verbundenheit is the sense of connectivity to all things. You'll have a natural affinity if you see a kitten or a puppy or a beautiful flower or a beautiful tree, a forest. Human beings have a natural connectedness to these things. It's part of wisdom-conditioned love. It's part of the Verbundenheit. Now, unfortunately, on Earth, in the time in which we live now, which is the third millennium, there's very little of this Verbundenheit feeling, this absolute connectedness, this wisdom-conditioned love is not active so much today. How did Svath describe to Billy the third millennium? He said that when the United States dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that the beginning of the third millennium will come. In later contact reports, it describes this third millennium as a time of confusion and maliciousness that's spreading all over the earth. And this time of confusion and maliciousness is starting to manifest itself. And it's going to precede a slowly approaching global collapse. Now, this global collapse could be the collapse of nature. It could be the clash of industrialized nations. And during this time, our leaders will become megalomaniacal. They will have grandiose ideas. They will exaggerate their own self-importance. They will take away our rights of self-determination. And the people will not respond well to this. They will become dumbed down. They will become indolent, lazy. They will become obtuse. They won't be able to think clearly. They'll be dumbed down. Also, the people will become indifferent. And you're starting to see that as well today. People, they're focused on their cell phones. They don't want to be bothered. You can't say hello to them. You can't be nice to them. They're all in their own little world. Well, this is the breeding ground for a kind of conflict that will start to occur in the third millennium. Now, the opposite of this conflict is this feeling of connectedness, this wisdom conditioned love, the Verbundenheit. And love is described this way in the Meyer teachings. It says, love is absolute certainty of oneself living and existing in everything that exists, in fauna and flora, in the fellow human beings, in each material and spiritual life form of any kind, and in the existence of the entire universe and beyond it. And this is where Sannyasi states that love and wisdom belong together, because creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. Well, we've defined now that love is this sense of connectedness to all things, and that wisdom is the ability to tell what's true and not true. Liebe is the German word for love. Weisheit is the German word for wisdom or sagacity. Now, our individual evolutionary level is, of course, decisive, and it depends on whether or not our predecessor personalities, which were who we were in the past, whether or not they recognized their responsibility and evolved in their consciousness as far as possible. If not, our inner self is not going to be like nature. It's going to be not congeneric with the innermost self. And in other words, with knowledge, love, wisdom, impulses of creation. In other words, if we don't evolve spiritually, we're not going to be in sync with the knowledge, love, and wisdom impulses of creation. And when we're not in sync with the knowledge, the love, and the wisdom impulses of creation, that leads to this chaos that is starting to come all over the earth. And we're seeing the rise of fanatical religions. And this all goes back to some information that we've talked about before in the Goblet of Truth. We can go back to the Roman Empire, for example. In the Goblet of Truth, it says, in the Christian world, the blame for this undoubtedly lies fairly and squarely at the door of the Roman Catholic Church. Christianity, as a monotheistic and strictly autocratically oriented religion, is guilty of developing completely new evil and escarted directions of thought. Escarted means to be out of control of the good nature. So, all the way back in ancient times, the people of the earth started to become influenced by the Giza intelligences. And what was forming is a kind of mental tyranny. And then the Giza intelligences were slowly kind of pushed off the earth, but these two giant religions started to evolve out of the machinations, the crafty plots and schemes of the Giza intelligences. That's where we got the Islamic religion and, for example, religions like Catholicism and Christianity. Now, especially under Rome, this started where a consciousness-conditioned tyranny started. And now this replaced the Roman military tyranny. First we had a military tyranny that came in place from the Roman Empire, and then a consciousness-conditioned tyranny. It's a tyranny of your mind. Our consciousness is the state of being awake and aware. And the power structures, since the time of the Roman Catholic Church and even before then, all the way back to the Giza intelligences, have been trying to mold our consciousness, conditioning our consciousness to bring something into the desired state for use so we could be used as good slaves. And a tyranny is a cruel, unreasonable use of power. Some examples of this consciousness-conditioned tyranny, let's look, for example, back in history at the Inquisition, where people were burned at the stake in what was called the auto de fe, where condemned heretics were burned at the stake. In the Spanish Inquisition, there was something like 31,912 people killed at the stake. This is all part of this tyranny that's being put in place. You've heard of the New World Order? Well, it's not really so new. It goes all the way back to the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria. Freedom from the consciousness condition tyranny is your knowledge of your connectedness to everything. That's what wisdom conditioned love is. Maybe put it in a way that might be more palatable. Your freedom from this tyranny depends on your love and your wisdom. Wisdom conditioned love, which again is your awareness of your natural connectedness to all things. That's what gives you empathy and compassion for a kitten, a puppy, a rabbit, any living creature, any part of the flora or fauna on the earth. That's your natural affinity, your closeness, your connection to everything. But because we've lost our closeness and connection to everything on the earth, we're destroying nature at an alarming rate. And this destruction of nature will eventually lead in our own destruction. Now, there was a time on the earth where we had a brief freedom from this kind of tyranny. We have a bit of a freedom from the tyranny during the Renaissance. Poof. And society went forward. Poof. And also during the time of the Druids. If you go back to the Iron Age started in about 1200 BC, and it was after the Bronze Age. Remember, we were recovering from the destruction of Atlantis and Lemuria. We're starting to learn to build iron tools. And in Britain and in Ireland, the Druids appeared on the scene. The Druids were an advanced people. They were educated. They were wealthy. One of these Druids was named Merlin, and he was a prince, and he was a teacher. He was a doctor. He lived in South Wales. He was part of this educated and professional class among the Celtic peoples. And Merlin had gotten a hold of some of the teachings of Henoch. Henoch is one of the earlier incarnations of Edward Albert Meyer. The earlier incarnations of his spirit, I should say, which the extraterrestrials refer to as Nokodemian. Our reference point is Billy. But this same spirit has been incarnating throughout this consciousness condition tyranny in order to provide enlightenment. Now, he provided enlightenment through his writings. He was long since dead by this time. To this druid prince, Merlin, who became very adept at meditating. And he had a place that he meditated. It was a place where, with trees and a very beautiful area. And one way or another, his meditation place started to be called the Holy Grail. That was the original Holy Grail. It was just a meditation place of the Druids. The Druids were meditators. They had learned from this writing called the Cauldron of Life, the teaching of Henoch, and they had contact with an extraterrestrial woman on the earth at that time, whose name was Caradwina. And Caradwina was a Plearn woman. She was actually the great aunt of Ptah, one of Billy's contacts. And Caradwina forged a sword on the Isle of Avalon. And that sword was called the Lightning Sword. And she gave it to Merlin, who used it some to defend himself, but unfortunately Merlin gave it to King Arthur of the Round Table, who was a very violent man. He was called the Boar of Cornwall. He wasn't so good-natured as people think he was. In fact, his knights weren't so very chivalrous either. And they brutally murdered many people, particularly using this lightning sword, which is actually a kind of a light ray weapon in the form of a sword that was forged on this island of Avalon by this woman, Caradwina. Now, eventually, Merlin gave this sword back. It was through the stories of old of the Round Table and whatnot. It was eventually called Excalibur. The real name of it was Caled Fluc. King Arthur eventually died. Merlin got the sword back and then gave it back to Caradwina, who left the earth at that time. Now, this all took place around 4th, 5th century AD. And this was the time when we had our various legends on the earth. We had the Holy Grail legends and the Holy Chalice legends. There was actually two separate legends. The Holy Grail was actually a meditation place of Merlin, but somehow the legend popped up that it was a chalice, a cup that was used to capture the blood of Christ when he was on the cross. That was the legend of the Holy Grail. Well, there was also the legend of the Holy Chalice, and that's the story of Christ when he was at the Last Supper and he was drinking from the Holy Chalice. And supposedly, there are four places on the earth today that argue that they have the original Holy Grail, or Holy Cup, as it will. What are these four places? During the Middle Ages, three major contenders for the position of the Holy Chalice stood out from the rest, one in Jerusalem, one in Genoa, and one in Valencia. And then there was one in Antioch in Greek, in the Greek lands. And we also have the stories of the Holy Lance or the Spear of Destiny. And there are four places where this spear that was supposed to have pierced Christ's side are said to exist. These are what's called the Cult of Relics, which is still associated with our religions of today. There's supposedly a Holy Lance that exists in Rome under St. Peter's Basilica, a Holy Lance that supposedly exists in Vienna. Each one of these places claims they have the Holy Lance. The one in Vienna was seen by Hitler in World War II. Hitler was obsessed with the Spear of Destiny, and he thought if he owned the Spear of Destiny, he would have control of the earth. Then there was a Holy Lance in Armenia, and there's a Holy Lance in Antioch. So each of these four places say they have the original Holy Lance. So the Holy Grail, the Holy Lance, and the Shroud of Turin are three of the examples of the Cult of Relics, which is also related to our incorrect thinking, our materialism. And Semyase warned Billy about our materialistic thinking here on the earth. And our materialistic thinking would eventually lead to our downfall if we did not correct this way of looking at. So what we should have is a wisdom-conditioned love, the knowledge of our connectedness with all things. I think the German word is Verbundenheit. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Ohio Exopolitics. I hope it's a respite from the insanity that's going on in the third millennium. And my understanding is that ISIS is growing in power. Who knows? They're probably backed by the West or the Saudi Arabians anyway. Remember your connectedness to all things. Have respect and venerability for nature and wisdom conditioned love for all. And we'll be back soon, folks. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder.